He's got a beautiful backswing.
Dad, oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the 73rd Hole. Colby Powell, Taylor Williams with you. It is U.S. Open week. Wingfoot, we're back at Wingfoot, first time since 2006, where there was just a tiny bit of drama. If there's one thing we know about Wingfoot, it's that a two-shot lead on the 18th tee is not safe. You need to be up by at least three going into 18 on Sunday. But we will have a full U.S. Open preview coming at you in the next couple of days as we get ready for Tiger, Phil, DJ, JT, all these guys. The only guys we won't see are Brooks Koepka and Scottie Scheffler. Scottie Scheffler having to withdraw after contracting COVID-19. And, of course, Brooks Koepka still battling injury, decided to withdraw from the U.S. Open last week. So we're going to preview the Safeway. Pardon me. We're going to recap the Safeway as well as the A&A Inspiration, because I got some things to say about the A&A Inspiration and the damn wall that they put up behind the 18th green, totally changing the integrity of the hole. But we'll discuss that as we go. Want to let everybody know, exciting news. Development. We've got a great new website here for the 73rd Hole podcast. Go to www.the73rdhole.com. We'll be updating that weekly. It's got links to all of our latest podcasts up there. It's got a preview for that week's tournament where you can click on a link. You can go see the course, all that good stuff. It's got a contact sheet there if you want to get in touch with us, ask us any questions, anything you want us to talk about on the podcast. Check it out at the73rdhole.com. And remember to follow us on social media. And those links are on the website as well. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that good stuff. Go to the website, the73rdhole.com, and check it out. Taylor, Stewart Cink takes down my 100-1 long shot, Harry Higgs. Stewart Cink, his first win. I actually didn't know that. First win since the 2009 Open Championship when he took down everyone's favorite, Tom Watson. It was, obviously, I had money on 100-1 long shot, so I was rooting hard against Stewart Cink. But it's cool that he got back in the winner's circle again after not being able to for so long.
Well, there's a few different ways you look at this. For me, from my perspective, whenever they mentioned that 2009, we all remember that, the Tom Watson year where he should have won, got a little screwed on the second shot, went over, then hit a nervous putt. Horrible, horrible 3-4-hole playoff, however long it was. Lost to Stewart Cink, so then everyone hated Stewart Cink for a while. So then I got to thinking to myself, where was I at when I was watching that in 2009, 11 years ago?
Oh, I distinctly remember.
And I'm like, all of the things that have happened in my life since then, and that's how long this guy's been playing golf in between wins on tour. It's crazy to think about how you can. I know that, you know, we talk about players like Charles Howell III and some of these other guys who don't win very often, but yet still keep their card and keep going out there, keep making checks. And for someone like Stewart Cink, I know obviously his last win being a major championship, but to keep grinding and keep going and keep staying strong in your game and to keep the confidence and to be able to go into Sunday, he hit. We were talking about it before we came on, Colby. He left a 6-footer short for par on 17 and hit a really bad shot onto the par. Was it 11, the par 3, where he chipped in?
Yes, 11, the par 3. Was the only guy that I saw come through in the afternoon wave who didn't hit the green in regulation. And then he chips in from off the front of the green, which, as a Harry Higgs better, just about made me lose
my mind. I'm surprised you didn't break something in the house.
Oh, probably the only reason I didn't is because I was watching on my phone because I had the NFL on the TV, which, by the way, the overlap of sports yesterday. Game 6, Clippers, stupid. Nuggets, NFL, Red Zone going all day long. Safeway Open. I watched the conclusion of the A&A Inspiration. It was, I mean, it was a sports day.
It was exactly what we talked about back in April and May, what we thought could happen. We just didn't know, and it did, and it was
glorious.
It was almost overwhelming in a sense because it was like, what do I pick?
Didn't have enough screens.
You didn't. I mean, and we have televisions, we have laptops, we have iPhones.
I had them all going.
You guys probably have a tablet. We actually sold our tablet just the other day because we don't use it because we don't need all these different things to watch.
Yeah, but my wife uses a tablet for work, but we never use it for other stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And we have all these different screens, and it's like they all could have came in handy yesterday. It was, it was a hell of a sports day. I mean, we could talk about the football, we talk about the basketball, we talk about everything, but we are on a golf podcast, so we will stick.
So we will talk about the football,
mostly to the golf.
Wait, yeah, the golf.
Yeah, we'll
sorry.
Stick mostly to the golf, yeah. And so, I mean, looking back on Stewart Cink, I looked back on this going, because I can't remember exactly what tournament it was. I'm trying to think back on it. I think it might have been the St. Jude where it happened, where the last three holes were the toughest three holes on the course. It might have been FedEx St. Jude. It might have been another course. I can't remember exactly where
I think it was Memphis.
I think it was Memphis.
Yeah, because the 18th at Memphis is tough.
I think so. Well, one of them, I think 16 is a par 5, so it may not have been. Nevertheless, one of our recent recap podcasts, I noticed the last three holes were the three hardest holes on the course. And
Deerfield Village, maybe?
It could have been it. And I look back on this, and number 18 and number 16, they're both par 5s, but they both tied for the easiest hole of the week.
Yeah, they're very easy golf
holes. Very easy holes. I mean, we're looking at, 18's 580, but it seemed like if you hit the fairway or even in the rough, Sink did, you're at least able to get it up there. Same thing with 16.
It's a short 580. Of course, it's playing hard and fast. So, like, Stuart Sink, it's 580. Stuart Sink, who's not a bomber by any means, had 250 in.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a 330-yard tee shot for Stuart Sink. It just ran
and
forever.
It's not like there's a big pond up there or it's an island green like the A&A Championship with a backboard behind it.
Right. No, the only thing up there is a fairway bunker where Harry Higgs hit it. Damn it.
Yeah, and when you needed an eagle.
Needed an eagle.
And ended up finishing solo second. So if you had bet on Harry Higgs to finish solo second or better, you would have been really good. But they don't pay for that, unfortunately.
That's right. It's only a $1,010 difference. I'm not bitter about it.
Ain't that crazy? $10. I mean, just that much. And it's just a few strokes here or there. And we could talk about Higgs. I mean, he had a bad bogey on, 15? The par 3. And then
the putty hit on 17. He had like an 8-footer for birdie on 17. And you knew he hit a good putt. It came off. Pace was good. I mean, he started at right lip and it never moved. And, I mean, you just think that putt's got to go back toward the front fringe. So, that putt just hung out to the right.
If that putt goes in, all of a sudden, you have to remind me on the coverage, Colby. So, Higgs had probably finished 17 before Sink finished 18, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Higgs was was actually in the fairway bunker waiting for Stuart Sink to clear.
Because it was just one group ahead,
yeah,
right?
Sink was in the group in front of him. They were, who did the walk of shame yesterday? It was Brian Stewart and James Hahn did the walk of shame in the final group where they didn't get their shots shown.
Let's say, I would have no clue because they didn't show him. So I didn't know.
It was very much walk of shame.
I was focused in on your Harry Higgs bet because I wanted you to hit that. And plus, too, he's moving up there with Afer Barnrad as my inspirations for golf.
People like Harry Higgs.
Oh, he's the man, dude. I mean, I love the fact, too, one of the things about him, I mean, he has no buttons buttoned up on that polo, and it's just out, and he's just letting the chest hang.
I think he actually has them custom made without buttons.
I think, first of all, Harry Higgs, I don't know if you shave your chest or not, bud, but you either need to get a little chest hair or stop shaving because you need to get that kind of Italian.
I thought he had a little soul patch going.
I think he needs that. Get it real fuzzy. Get like the Italian porn star look going, you know, and just
that
let
is
it,
very specific.
You know, just let it roll with it.
That is very, I mean, that's entirely too specific.
Portuguese porn star, I don't know. So somewhere along those lines, whatever nationality has a lot of hair.
But here's the thing about Harry Higgs.
That's the only way you can improve Harry Higgs' look.
Here's the thing about Harry Higgs. I think the reason everybody loves him so much is because in a world of Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka and Tony Finau and these guys who are just absolute specimens, there are still the Harry Higgses of the world. And that's what's great about golf. It's all different shapes and sizes can be great at golf. It doesn't matter what you look like. It just matters how you can advance the ball. I mean, to play in the NBA, you kind of need a certain body type to play in the NBA. Same thing in the NFL. Obviously, you can be a lineman and kind of be like that, but you still got to be huge. And golf is, I feel like, the one sport where you can have Tony Finau and Harry Higgs coming down the stretch, competing with each other in an athletic event. Well, it's phenomenal.
And we've talked about this on quite a few of our shows, but this is just an example. The guys that finished solo first and solo second in this event, 47-year-old man who has not won in 11 years, and Harry Higgs, who's 6'2", 235, 28-year-old, and that 235 is not muscle.
No, I don't think he has muscles.
He hits it fairly good. So, I mean,
no, he hits it pretty good.
He's got probably 31% muscle, 69% fat, if I had to guess.
Nice. Yeah, that sounds about right. But, yeah, Stuart Sink gets it done. It's funny, Brian Stewart and James Hahn, I was watching a little bit of it early, and I think it was on maybe the sixth hole, maybe six or seven. I think it was on six, actually. They both had 5 feet for birdie, roughly 5 feet for birdie, and they both missed. And I thought to myself, boy, that is just going to be a picture of their day going forward.
And you see that a lot of times coming, which is weird because I always tell players that I teach or anyone that I talk to, you know, try not to focus on what's going on in your group and just focus on what you can control in your game. But you see it all the time on Sunday where you'll have two guys who are either the group behind or two or three groups behind, whatever it is, and both of those guys in that group somehow end up being contending in, at the leaderboard. It seems like they're building off of each other's energy a little bit, and you'll have groups that went out after them where they'll just, both of those guys will kind of halt, and it's like, You tend to see that a lot more than you do, like one guy out of one group coming and then like a guy out of the another group going. It seems like a lot of times when you have a couple of chasers, they're in the same group coming down, which is something that, you know, I mean, I guess if you're playing with someone who's playing, who's on fire, you would say, hey, let's try to do what he's doing, you know, and try to ride that wave. But I just find it interesting that even the pros who get to a stage to where, you know, they need to focus so much on what they're doing, but yet they can ride on the momentum of some of the other players. But we were able to see that yesterday, the walk of shame, as we saw those players who weren't able to come in and get it done, as we saw. And it's just weird to me how, and you could have a take on that, Colby, just exactly how that group momentum can actually go into it. Because, you know, for someone who's played a lot of competitive golf, I mean, I get done at the end and I play with someone and I'm like, oh man, they shot 700. That's fantastic. Good for them. And it's like, I had no idea what they were shooting. And it's just weird to see how on the tour sometimes that happens, where you're playing with someone who's playing really good, all of a sudden you start playing better, or someone who's playing worse, and then you don't get the birdies going. We've seen it with Tiger in some of the Thursday, Friday groups with that PGA Tour live coverage, where it's like, oh, he played with Rory and he played with JT and they all shot around even or one over. And the announcers will say it. They're like, they just seem to not build off each other's energy. And I mean, you can comment on it a little bit, Colby. I find it interesting and how golf works like that, because, you know, normally in the other sport, like you mentioned basketball, you're going against another team, or football, you know, going against a receiver, cornerback, that type of thing. And it seems like that honestly, who you're paired with and how your playing partner is playing that day can have some impact, if not a decent amount of impact, on how you play, depending on how you personally handle it.
Yeah, I think it's just a psychological thing, and obviously everybody probably handles it different, but you have to convince yourself that your game's not dependent on what other people are doing, and you're not only going to go low if your playing partner is going to go low. And nobody has that mindset going into the round. Nobody goes in like James Hahn didn't go in yesterday and think, man, if Brian Stewart plays good today, oh man, I'm gonna play great.
Well,
it just happens.
The very few exceptions are like a few years ago at Troon, where it was a clear or Stinson Phil, where they were, yes, like both eight shots,
yeah,
ahead,
yeah, it turns
into a match play. Yeah. Well, essentially match play, but it's just a two horse race at that point. So there are a few exceptions.
It was just Stinson playing one of the greatest rounds of golf we've ever seen.
But like this, you had T7 was only four shots off the lead. So going throughout the day, it was a pretty tight leaderboard. It was not like what we saw at that. And you see that maybe once a year, if not once every couple of years. It doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, not very often. And Doc Redman got out and posted early with a 62. And you knew that 18 under wasn't going to hold up, because there were just too many guys that started at like 14 or better on an easy golf course. And early in the day, it's like, oh man, 18 looked pretty good, because that's where the tougher holes are at. And then, you know, three of the last 10 holes are easy par fives. The three easiest holes on the course, 9, 16, and 18, are all par fives, and pretty much everybody was birdieing or eagling those. Harry Higgs with the phenomenal shot that he hit from the left rough, not real rough, took the drop, goes under the tree, plays a little hook up there to 4 feet, kicks that in for eagle. It was pretty good stuff there from Higgs. But all in all, I thought the Safeway was a pretty good tournament. We got to talk about somebody, Taylor. We got to talk about somebody, and that somebody is former number one player in the world, three-time major champion Jordan Spieth, who has been fighting his golf game in a just horrible, horrible way over the last year or two. And, man, it just seems like it's getting worse before it gets better. He goes out to play the Safeway Open, which strength of field for this tournament was not high.
It was, I had it right here, Colby. It was a 111.
111 strength of field. And Spieth really didn't even sniff the cut. He missed the cut by three shots.
And for comparison's sake, the strongest strength of field for a regular season event Memorial, like we talked about, was over 800.
That was like 814 or something,
yeah,
like that.
Yeah, exactly. And now we're dropping down to 111. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you'll see, for example, even the Paul Azinger European Tour events, are sometimes the bigger events, mm-hmm, over there,
oh, yeah,
get 330, 350 points.
Yeah.
And now we're looking
Dhabi
at
one of Dubai
not
Desert
saying
Classic.
There's not a lot of, yeah, great players in this field. We're just talking comparison sake
but
to
the
what.
The big boys weren't there.
Exactly, yeah.
I mean, we have Stuart Sink and Harry Higgs and Doc Redman coming down the stretch. That's, the big boys weren't there.
I mean, we're talking about, like I said, this is all comparison and relative. This is a former number one player in the world with three major championships who's
still in his 20s, by the way.
Who's still in his 20s, who is, if he makes the cut, he's struggling to crack the top 50. And then, like this last week, in a strength of field 111 in a tournament where you would think, any other case, oh, hey, give me a guy who was number one in the world 2 years ago or however long, 3 years ago now probably, and got three major championships, strength 111, I'm going to bet on that guy. You know, he's got to have a chance. And you pulled it up, Colby. He's 100-1 odds to win next week at the U.S. Open.
100-1.
100-1. And he's a three-time major champion. Within the last 5 years, he's won all of them within the last five. Well, I guess technically it would be, you know, yeah, Masters was
five calendar years ago.
Yeah, but just think about that. I mean, that's – and this isn't someone like a – I mean, we watched Jordan Spieth, and us as golf fans, we know he's not like a – just for comparison, like Padraig Harrington, we knew that he wasn't going to win.
We knew that he got hot, and that was that. Yeah. And we weren't going to be hearing from Padraig Harrington going in and out every week.
He wasn't
going to
win six or seven majors. We knew that.
People, not us, because it was asinine, but people who didn't know what they were talking about were comparing Jordan Spieth in the start of his career to Tiger Woods.
Oh, it was stupid.
And again, that was asinine. And we weren't doing that.
And don't get me wrong.
I mean, the fall from grace has been steep.
It got my blood boiling every time I hear it, and it's been hard. And don't get me wrong, if Spieth can get it figured out, and even back then, I have a friend, shout out Johnny, who said after basically the start of 2018 that Spieth would never win again. And, you know, me and all of us golf, you're like, yeah, sure, buddy, yeah, you just hate
Spieth. I think that's dumb. I think that's a dumb bet.
You just hate Spieth. And will he win again? Yes, but he's 2.5 years later, and the only reason his point was being made is, and it was kind of flawed, was that Spieth just gets lucky with his putter, which is why he does it. And it kind of makes sense in the sense of his ball striking has gone completely to hell and he can't play, or he can't play his extreme success. But as we recap in our player profile, which is actually on our new website page, which we'll describe even more in the detail before the show ends, but detailed that his best putting year was when he played his worst golf. So even when he gets lucky with his putter, with his ball striking being as bad as it was, he's just not able to get there. And that was the most shocking number, Colby, is what you read to me this morning, that he is 100-1. You have the exact same odds on Spieth to win the U.S. Open as you'd get on Harry Higgs to win this last week's tournament.
Yes. Yeah, which is absolutely insane. Let me throw a radical idea out at you. So Spieth is struggling to hit fairways, right? Makes it really tough for him to he just doesn't hit a lot of fairways. He's playing out of the rough all the time.
I think they showed his metrics. He was hitting 52% of the fairways. That feels high just from watching him.
It feels more like 32%.
Yeah.
He's struggling to hit fairways. So here's my radical idea for Jordan Spieth. Bulk up, put on 40 pounds, start trying to hit it 30 yards further because you're already not hitting fairways. So why not just try to hit some bombs, get yourself closer to the green, and try to win a different way? Because the way that he's trying to win clearly is not working. What do you think about Spieth potentially going the Bryson route and bulking himself? He's not in fairways anyway. What do you have to lose? It's not accuracy.
No, you wouldn't be losing accuracy at that point, and it might tighten his swing up, because you see it a lot of times. Like we mentioned, he didn't seem to have the balance, and it seemed like his everything's just not in sync. You can tell his body
and
everything.
Right arm just kind of flails.
Well, he's always had the little bit of chicken wing, and you could tell that it is just not where it needs to be here.
It always looks like he's trying to guide the ball.
Let's see.
Does it look like that to you when you watch him swing?
Well, it's just like we talked about. He's playing golf swing as opposed to golf golf game.
Yes,
he's just playing golf swing. And
I
so
agree.
Here's a stat for you, Cole. We talk about driving accuracy. So he hit 52% of his fairways or whatever, but he ranked 162nd on tour in distance from edge of fairway, which that describes your big miss. So
it means he's missing the fairway by a lot.
So for anyone who isn't aware, we'll kind of break it down in just a few minutes. So driving accuracy is literally just a yes or a no. It is, did you hit the fairway or did you not?
Right. So you could be in the fairway by 2 inches, or you could be on the center stripe. Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Or you could be 2 inches off the fairway in the first cut of rough with a really nice lie, or you could be over in the trees having to take an unplayable. It adds up to be the same. But like, for example, this one right here, I have to go deeper into the stats to find it. This is distance from edge of the fairway. I like to look at distance from edge of center of the fairway, but they're relatively about the same. You won't see a whole lot of difference in between those two.
Yeah, I actually kind of like distance from edge of fairway, because I feel like a lot of time guys aren't aiming for the center of the fairway.
That's true. But the reason I like center of the fairway, and this is getting down different rabbit holes, because there's been... And every hole has a different exception, because like a course like Colonial, you could be in the fairway and be blocked out by trees, right, that kind of thing. But generally over the course of a full year, the angle that you have into a flag, actually Brandon Chamblee broke this down pretty good one time, that on certain holes, it actually you actually have a higher scoring average having a better angle into the flag. Maybe it's because of either trying to attack the pin too much and short-sighting yourself, or just from maybe being overconfident, whatever it may be.
That's interesting.
Basically, what the point is, there is no correlation between being on one side of the fairway or another depending on the pin. Essentially, it's if you're in the fairway, you're going to have just as good a chance no matter what side of the fairway you're on if you have the same yardage. So the point being, that's why I look at center of the fairway, because my theory is unless it is a course like Colonial or right. a certain hole where you can't be on one side of the fairway or you're blocked out, or I mean, we have courses around here where it's better to be in the left rough than on the right side of the fairway, like even at Dornick Hills, but you know, a tree line course, you know, where you can just sit out where
what about,
it's
what about 18 at Oak Tree East?
Exactly, yeah.
And if you're on the right edge of the fairway there, that tree's overhanging the green, and that's a tough angle to come in from.
We saw that at the Oklahoma Open.
Yes we did. You gotta play a big old high fade if you're coming in from the right side of that fairway.
Yes we did. And so basically there are exceptions to the rule, but that's why I look at distance from the center, because generally, and there's a lot of dog legs you have to play too, but I would say aim at center fairway. But getting back to the Spieth thing, that really goes to show it right there. You're ranking 100 and also too, here we go right here, Colby. He ranks 175th in left rough tendency and 153rd in right rough tendency.
Dude, that's so bad.
So he is hitting it both ways.
That is
so bad. He's got the two-way miss.
Yeah, it's no wonder he can't make the cut at the Safeway. At the Safeway, Taylor. He missed the cut by three shots.
And we could have went down with this with Steve Ball when he had him on our last show. The difference between a one-way and a two-way miss is so extreme, because...
Well, it's the difference in being able to manage it and score and having no chance.
Well, in the course of a round, that's definitely true. And even over the course of trying to improve your game, it's even more drastic, because if you're missing it one way every time, it's generally one problem, where it's either ball position, alignment... You're either just way underneath, whatever it is. Normally, it's just one problem, and it can be fixed within... If you put in your practice, it can be fixed relatively fast. You're someone like Spieth now who's missing it both ways, so now all of a sudden, you're having to dissect exactly where it's going, because it's going wrong two different ways, two different times. So now, you're essentially having to figure out two more different equations, and there could be a lot more factors to it, because if you're missing it both ways, you can be missing it both ways for multiple reasons. Normally, when you're missing it one way, you're missing it one way for one reason. And so, to me, just looking back more on Spieth, we talk about him so much on this show, and it got my blood boiling so much. You mentioned it earlier, Colby, with the fact of how he was being compared to Tiger at such a young age whenever it was just clear that he wasn't there. And I don't know what I need to do, Colby. I'm not sure if I agree with the bulking up mentality, just because...
That was just kind of a radical theory. That's just my what do you have to lose theory, what he's doing clearly isn't working.
I don't think it is, Colby. In all honesty, it's just not something I would personally do if I was him, just because... Let me pull up his... Let's see what we got. I mean, he's 6'1", 175. So, I mean, let's just say he got up... Let's say he put on 30 pounds and got... Or 25. Let's say he got up to 200. So for me, I wonder, you know, for example, would he have any injuries when he went down that route? Would he, and one thing too, whenever you bulk up that people don't notice and people don't really think about with DeChambeau that much, because he has a single length wedges and he looks so stiff whenever he putts that he doesn't look like he has much feel. But most people, when they bulk up, the club feels entirely different in their hands.
Yeah.
Putter and
yeah.
everything. I mean, I believe we talked about this before in the podcast, and I may have been wrong, but I'm 99% sure it was Johnny Miller that said it, where he went up to a cabin in the woods one winter and chopped wood. And it was kind of later in his career, and he came back, and the club never felt the same, because his forearms and arms and hands and everything got so much stronger, the club felt like a feather. And it was kind of, whenever I lost a lot of my weight this over the winter, it felt the same way for a good period of time. And for someone like Spieth, who we talked about how his ball striking carried him for so long, but even if Spieth got his ball striking back, if his putter fell back, I don't think that he would be able to get back to where he was, number one. So if gaining all that weight is going to make it to where he doesn't have that putter as his floor of his game, because we saw it last year, even when he's playing his worst putting, he had a horrible year last year, but he finished third at the PGA Championship. He had a couple of top 10
finishes. Finished second on the season in strokes gained putting?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so he has a little bit of a floor, made it to, I don't think he made it to East Lake last year, no, but he was in the top 40 or whatever of the FedEx Cup, so that putting at least gave him chances to contend.
Right.
And so if he bulks up, he's taking a risk to make his ball striking back to where he already had it at a point to where he was successful, because he was second in 2017, I believe, in strokes gained approach to green.
Yeah. You know what I think we're going to see more of from Spieth? I think we're going to see more of him at the Safeway and at the Mayakoba and at all these other smaller events that we don't usually see him at, because he needs reps and he needs FedEx Cup points. And if he can't get FedEx Cup points at places like Muirfield Village and TBC Sawgrass and the majors and these other places where there are all these points on the line, you know, and this, it almost sounds crazy to say this out loud. He's got to do what Lanto Griffin and Sebastian Munoz did. He's got to try to win one of these smaller events and then just accrue some points by playing 25 times to get himself to East Lake.
Well, and it's kind of, you make a good point there about just playing more tournaments, but I'm going to go on a different side of it, not just for the FedEx Cup points, but we've kind of mentioned it with other guys like Finau and Fleetwood. If they can just get that win, the floodgates will open, we feel like. And maybe that's something with Spieth. Maybe Spieth goes out and wins a, hell, even if he had to, he's not going to do it because he's in the events, but if he played an opposite field event and won.
Right.
You know, or just something small. Go play a
come out to the greens tomorrow for the member guest nine hole scramble.
Yeah, go play that, or go play, I was going to say it's a little tough now with the travel, but go play some miniature European Tour event, one of the smaller fields. I mean, it would rank strength of field pretty similar to what we had this week at 111. So
just keep trying to win so you can feel what it's like to win.
That's exactly what I'm saying. You're looking more of the FedEx Cup points to get you up, and that is extremely important because, like I said, he's missed East Lake 2 years in a row, which is pretty crazy for Spieth. And I think he just needs, if he can just get one win under his belt, wherever it is, I think that's when he'll start to get his, I'm not going to say his swagger back, because I don't think he'll ever be number one in the world again.
A lot of it right now is confidence, though.
I think that's at least 90% of it, if not more. I mean, you can just tell. I mean, it's the same thing every week, no matter what it is. I mean, obviously he missed the cut this week, but when he was making cuts, he was finishing DFL.
Yeah, who was it that said golf's 90% mental and only 50% physical? It's a great quote, by the way.
The one I've heard is golf's 90% mental and 10% between your ears, or something like that.
Okay,
it's essentially where it's like it's all mental, which is the case. And
by the way, he'd have no chance to contend tomorrow at the Greens member guest scramble because you and I are in the field. So.
Everybody
needs to watch out.
Yes, that is a good point. Yes, I forgot about that. Yeah, I thought that was next week for some reason.
That's tomorrow, baby.
That's tomorrow. Oh, I'm excited.
Hope your game's peaking at the right time for a nine-hole member guest scramble.
Oh, it is. We're peaking for that. Then I got an oil field tournament playing down for a couple of days, Thursday and Friday. And then
where's that at?
Bushwood.
Shout out Bushwood
and Chickasha. Then playing the Charlie Randall Memorial Scramble. We brought it up a couple times. Both of our high school head coach, Chad Randall, his father Charlie ran the pro shop up at the club for 40+ years, maybe even longer.
That's all I knew.
He was running it long before we were even conceived. Even before we were even in our daddy's ball sacks. I mean, that's how long he was out there. And so ever since his passing a few years ago, we always hold a memorial tournament every year. And my beautiful girlfriend, Caitlin, are going to play. This will be her first ever tournament experience. I'm not sure if she's even gotten through. I know she hasn't gotten through 18 holes of golf yet. I don't know if she's gotten through 9. I'd have to go back and count on it. And the Charlie Scramble is a 27-hole scramble. So we're, how they say it, throwing her into the fire.
Absolutely.
Sometimes
you're better off to just dive into the pool head first.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
Learn how to swim.
So we got that. And then the next week, I'm going to play in Arkansas for the Arkansas Open the week after that. So I've got a lot of golf coming up. And we're starting off tomorrow with the member guest. So we might as well start it off with a W.
Yeah, exactly. We got the member guest scramble tomorrow. This Friday, I've got two-man best ball match play out at the greens. And then this Saturday, we've got a two-day member tournament, which is a 666. So scramble, best ball, and then alternate shot, 666 Saturday, 666 Sunday. So I hopefully will be getting morning tee times so that I can watch all of the leading groups in the U.S. Open, which will be good. Also, I got totally screwed on the Oklahoma State football game because Oklahoma State was supposed to play this past Saturday at 6, and instead they're playing this coming Saturday at 11, and I'll probably tee off around 9 or 9:30 Saturday. So I basically will miss the entire OSU football game, but they're just playing Tulsa. I say they're just playing Tulsa. Half the Big 12 lost to teams that are worse than Tulsa. So,
boy, that's no doubt. Yeah, at least your game isn't on pay-per-view like mine was. I couldn't even
watch it. That's a good point. I listened to it on the radio coming back from Tulsa. I take that back. I listened to the first quarter on the radio coming back from Tulsa, and I think it was like 28-0, and then I think we started listening to music.
I mean, I went through, and I'm notorious for, if something is paid and you have to, like, for example, I watched the Red Zone channel yesterday on my computer, and so you can find
a stream.
You can find a stream of it, and There was no string to be found of the OU game. I couldn't find it. I looked everywhere possible, couldn't find it. And let me tell you something, Colby, it was the definition of a first world problem, not being able to watch my college football team play their game.
Yeah, shout out to them for keeping their pay-per-view private.
Well, the thing
tough
is,
to do in the 2020. Know,
like I said, we were going to keep it mainly golf today, but I thought it was interesting that the pay-per-view for the game was $55, and I am scrolling through on ESPN, going to Ticket Hub or whatever their link is on there. You could get tickets for as low as $25
nice.
To watch it. So nice. It would have been beneficial to just go down and just watch the damn game as opposed to trying to buy it on TV. And I don't know if it would happen because I didn't buy it, but a lot of people, whenever you do stuff like that, the freaking thing doesn't even work. Oh, yeah,
Chisholm. I saw our buddy Chisholm was tweeting out on Saturday, like 30 minutes after the game kicked. Anybody's pay-per-view working yet? And I was like, oh, no.
Well, bro, you remember, what was it, 4 or 5 years ago when they had the Pacquiao Mayweather fight?
Oh, yeah.
We ordered that, and
down at my parents' house. Yeah, my dad ordered it, and we could not get it to work for anything.
It wouldn't work. It wouldn't come through.
And we pulled up a choppy-ass stream on, like, Periscope or something.
That's what I was trying to do for the OU game. I couldn't even get that far. So, yeah. I mean, that's a different rabbit hole for the pay-per-view things there. So yeah, you got screwed on that, but nevertheless, we got a lot of golf coming up between us and we'll recap how we did in our member guests, either depending on when we get our preview show out, either if we get it out tomorrow or Wednesday morning.
That way we can recap the big dub at the member guest. Because we're going low.
That's a good idea. And
we're going very low.
And we might need some time because we got a lot to break down at the U.S. Open. We've got Patrick Reed came out and said that the rough's the longest he's ever played, so we know that he has an advantage there.
Playing the ball up a grip.
He gets it up a grip when everyone... He gets handed a different rule sheet than everyone else at the start of it. Right. And so
all the regular rules are redacted.
Yeah.
They're just blacked out.
Yeah, there it is. Exactly. Yeah, like an old Cold War file or something. That's really cool. That's a good idea. And all his, it's like, or he takes in a pencil or a Sharpie and puts a little dot by it, like a little bullet point, and put ball played up one grip. Yes. And Sharpie, and then fakes the signature of the rules official.
Yeah, so then if he gets in trouble, he just shows him the sheet, and he's like, I've got it right here, sir. Ball will be played up one grip through the green.
Ball will be played up one grip through and on the green.
He
even added
and
that.
And in the bunkers. And shout out Tim Still, our high school teammate who played the ball up in the bunker at a tournament then bragged about it after the round because he didn't know the rule.
I told that story to our Coach Randall and friend Chad German last week after tournament we played on Friday down there, and they laughed for a solid 5 minutes.
It was
one of the funniest stories. And so I'll just say, for anyone who didn't, so anyone who knows, you play a tournament and you play it up. You're not supposed to be able to play it up on the green or in hazard. So if you're in a water bunker, you can't move the ball. And the four man, he was really our five man because we only had four people on our team. He was our worst player by far. Tim, a really great guy, but nevertheless,
love Tim.
Oh yeah,
he's a super clown.
He's the definition of a superstar. And so we're talking like every high school team or college team does after you get done. You talk about different shots you had throughout the round. And
oh yeah, everybody goes around, talks about all your favorite shots, all the times you got screwed, all that good stuff.
Yeah, all the crazy stuff you saw, whatever it may be. And so Tim's bragging about one of these shots he hit out of a bunker, and he's like, yeah, I hit it in this bunker and it was just plugged. It was like a fried egg. I could see maybe three dimples on the ball.
He's like, dude, it was right up in the face. I wouldn't even be able to hit it.
It was horrible. And he was setting it up like he hit this awesome explosion shot out of the bunker. And so we're all just sitting here with anticipation. He's like, yeah. So then I used my club length and I picked it up and I put it on a nice perch lie and I hit it up there to about 8 feet and I made the putt. And like, we're all just laughing while he's still talking. And we're like, what are y'all laughing about? What
his delivery, too. He's like, so I put the tee in the sand next to the ball to mark it. And I played it up, got it on a nice little lie, parsed it up real nice. And I was like, oh, my God. That's classic, Tim.
Well, and it was funny, too, because we had a four-man team that year. And you, me, and shout out Brady Bellinger, we made it as three individuals, and Tim didn't go because we didn't make it as a team. But we had three individuals.
So you won the regional tournament as an individual, right?
No, I did not win. No, you I finished okay. second or third, something like that. Okay. Gooch was in you. The field at John Conrad. He won.
Gooch, oh, yeah, it was at Conrad, at Gooch's home course. I think you finished second to Gooch. Me and Brady qualified as individuals, and we didn't make it as a team.
Yeah, and we had a four-man team.
Next year we got state runner-up because Tim improved so much. So yeah, shout out, Tim. Round of applause.
Yeah. So there's our funny high school story. I mean, we could probably share 1,000 of them if we did.
We could do a 10-hour long podcast.
Well, you know, in all honesty, before the COVID and everything, when we thought we were going to have a hiatus in the golf, we had some shows planned like that where we just had funny golf moments. And now that we've got golf lined up really up until the end of 2021, you know, barring any other little catastrophes, we might have to hold that off for a while. We'll just sprinkle them in from time to time, kind of like we did today.
Yeah. If you want to see that, you know what you can do? You can go to the 73rd hole and you can let us know. There's a contact us sheet. You can hit us up. Let us know what you want us to talk about on the podcast. Well,
and the thing about the website that people need to realize is that, and you know the exact name of the software, Colby, but we got some software that most people use, some generic WordPress and that kind of thing. This website, full customization options. I've worked for different companies, had to update different websites, and I've never seen anything like this, Colby. It's pretty insane the amount of customization and everything that we can add to it. And so I think that, and see, this is kind of, we've got it up and running, but I would consider it even in the beta stages, because I think that,
oh yeah, we're going to be adding to it.
Oh yeah, it's going to be adding, and so it'll be something to definitely keep up and monitor, because we'll keep that up. We'll have all our social medias on there as well. We even have some articles up there. We'll have different links to different things, and it's going to be one of the more unique and cool websites out there, in my opinion.
Yep. So go check it out. It's just getting launched right now, but yeah, like I said, we're going to keep adding to it. We're going to try to get our picks and stuff up there, get some previews, some articles, some stuff like that. So head over to the73rdhole.com and check it out. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back on the other side, and we're going to talk about the wall. That's right. We're talking about the damn wall on the other side that determined a major championship on the LPGA Tour. That's coming up next. Stay with us here on the 73rd hole.
When something the size of a golf ball hits your roof, you need to call McRae Roofing. McRae Roofing is Oklahoma's designer roofing service specialist. For years, Jeff McRae and the experienced team at McRae Roofing and Exteriors have served fellow Oklahomans by helping them with their roofing needs. McRae Roofing uses only top quality materials and professional crews to make sure that each job is done right, so it will give you the years of service, security, and protection you need from the unpredictable Oklahoma weather. McRae Roofing offers residential and commercial roofing, ventilation services, and custom copper designs. McRae Roofing is dedicated to exceeding the homeowner's expectations. It's not just a roof, it is your home's crowning glory. Call McRae Roofing today at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000. Make sure to also visit their website at mcraeroofing.com. That's M-C-R-A-Y roofing.com. Don't get caught with a leaking roof. Contact McRae Roofing for your free inspection today.
Welcome back. Rolling along here on the 73rd hole. Colby Powell and Taylor Williams with you. Big win for Stuart Singh. Big second place finish for me with Harry Higgs at 100-1. Boy, that feels good, doesn't it? Taylor, you had a pretty good DraftKings lineup. You had Christopher Ventura, who got himself in contention definitely on Saturday. Never really got himself up real close to the lead on Sunday, but had a good showing for the former Cowboy.
Yeah. I've been riding him a few weeks on the DraftKings, and you're kind of waiting for some of these young guys. You know, who's going to break out when? Will they break out? And if they do, exactly when it'll happen? Ventura had another good week. I think he's going to be a player to watch in these next, you know, because we talk about it. We got all this great golf with the U.S. Open and the Masters coming up, WGC in there. But then in between there's a few other smaller events very similar to the Safeway this last week. And I think Ventura will be a guy to watch over the course of those events, over the tournaments that don't draw the stronger fields. A guy like Ventura or some of these younger guys, I think, are people to look out for who might be able to get out and get that breakthrough. And kind of like Cameron Champ did a few years ago when he won in the fall, and then he did it the very next year.
Yeah,
too.
Won
the
Safeway, yeah.
Yeah, again in the fall. So maybe doing something like that. Ventura played great. Obviously wasn't able to hold it over the weekend, but was able to make a little bit of money in our little small pool, because, I mean, it was just kind of a hit or miss week. It was hard to get a lineup to where you had all six guys get up there in contention, just because the money.
I had four missed cuts. I had Tyler Duncan missed the cut. Friend of the show, Taylor Gooch, did not have a good second round. He missed the cut. I had Kevin Tway, who's won at that course, missed the cut. And then what was my other miscut? Mark Hubbard, who shot 4 under on the first day.
He had been playing really good.
Yeah, shot 4 under on the first day, 68, and he missed the cut. So it was not a good week for me in DraftKings. But, Taylor, I want to talk about this A&A inspiration because, I mean, major championship on the LPGA, it's at the same course every year. It's kind of, in that way, it's kind of like the LPGA's Masters. You jump in the pond after you win, player and caddy and all that good stuff. It's a fun tournament. It's a fun event. So I see on Twitter and on the app that it's close late. So I flip over there to watch the leaders come down 18. So I flip over there, Brooke Henderson and Nelly Korda are on the tee on 18. Cord is at 15 under. Henderson is at 14 under. And I see that Miriam Lee has just chipped in again on 18 for eagle to get herself to 15 under. So I'm thinking, wow, that's an impressive chip in. And then as I'm watching the hole, here's what I realize. I realize that number 18 at the A&A Inspiration is an island green. And what have they done? There's usually grandstands, which, first of all, why you would have grandstands on the island green and not just across the water to watch the hole, it's completely asinine to me. But so what they did, since they didn't have grandstands, they built like this 100-foot long, 20-foot high wall that they put there to basically prevent any bad shots from going in the water. So what happened is Miriam Lee hits her second shot over the green on 18, gets relief from the wall, chips in for eagle to get to 15. Brooke Henderson, who I was watching live, hits a 5-wood out of the rough, coming in low and hot. And this thing lands hard on the back of the green, kicks into and actually goes under the wall, and they have to like crawl, the caddy has to crawl under there and identify it so they can get the drop. She gets a drop, hits the chip, it lands on the downslope, funnels all the way down to the hole to 2 feet. She taps in and she gets in the playoff. Nelly Korda, because she couldn't go for it in two because her lie in the rough wouldn't allow her, has to lay up, hits a wedge to 25 feet, ends up making par and goes to the playoff. They had a wall over the green that, in my opinion, helped determine the outcome of the major championship. I don't want to take anything away from Miriam Lee. She played phenomenally. She chipped in 3 times in the final round. So she chipped in on 6, she chipped in on 16 and 18, and she birdied the first playoff hole and was the only one to birdie the first playoff hole. So I don't want to take anything away from her. She played phenomenal golf. But I don't understand why, if you don't have grandstands, they put the wall up. They said they wanted it to play the same. Why? There aren't fans there. It doesn't play the same. Why would you artificially put a wall in to stop bad shots from going in the water on the 18th hole of a major championship? Drives me nuts.
Well, and we talk about it, and we look, we think about other island greens. Obviously, TBC at Sawgrass, number 17 is the first one that sticks
off the back.
That's what I was about to say. And obviously, you're hitting a wedge in there, so it's and I think that's what makes the wall at this tournament even worse. Is you're, like you said, Brooke Henderson's hitting a 5-wood in there. You're having long clubs go in that can potentially go long and you can't control your distance as well. I mean, that's the whole point of a damn island green, is to make it to where it's a tough shot and you have to be able to control your distance and your accuracy. And
you're coming in from a long way away on a par 5. It takes the risk reward out of it. Takes the risk reward totally out of it.
Yeah, because if you're Brooke Henderson and if you know you have a backboard to hit it off of.
That's what it was a backboard.
And if it's that high, okay, for example, let's say you're 250 out and that wall is, what, 15 yards over the green and 20 feet high?
Yeah, roughly, probably.
Okay, so you have, if you're 250, you have to fly it 275, 280 to hit it over that wall?
Right.
If that?
No, I guarantee you nobody in the whole field hit it over that wall this week.
No, so, I mean, there's so many different ways that you could play the hole and that's, if you're in the fairway, that's the only way you can do it, is you have to aim, you just have to hit it, and you know that you can go long because it's like a backboard. It's like if you're playing basketball and you're shooting a half-court shot, throw it as hard as you can at the little square on the board because you know you have that behind you. And for these players, it took so much risk-reward out of it, and you watched more of it than I did, Colby, coming down the stretch. I saw a little bit of it, and just, I don't understand. First of all, I don't understand the thought process behind it. The only way I see it as being anything beneficial of the tournament is the fact that, oh, we put this wall back here so we give players incentivize them more to go for it because they know that they won't go in the water long.
Yeah, that would be trying to create more birdies on 18. They're artificial birdies.
That's what it is. And that's why I don't like it. That would be the only. If you looked at it on paper and said, oh, we can set this wall up because more of the ladies will go for it and they'll make more birdies and have more eagle opportunities. Okay, that sounds fine on paper. But then you look at it and you're like, oh, shit, well, this just completely changed the outcome of this major championship because this ball should have went in the water, or how many ever balls should have went in the water, and they hit this little wall and they get to drop it in the spot to where they just, all they got to do is land it anywhere on the green, and because of the way the green funnels, ball just runs down there to within 5 or 6 feet every time, yeah, really, no matter
Sunday,
what you do.
For the Sunday pin, They got like 40 feet of green to work with on fast greens, running straight away from them. And I mean, you're just chipping the ball about 15, 20 feet. I mean, just land it. Miram Lee and Brooke Henderson didn't land their chips close together. Miram Lee's went in. Miram Lee's probably 6, 8 feet by maybe if it doesn't go in. But it's not like it was going off the other side of the green and rammed the flagstick. It was a good chip. And then Brooke Henderson just went up there and it died about 2 feet from the hole. It was a pretty easy chip. The person I feel bad for is Nelly Korda, because I truly believe that if the wall wasn't there, Nelly Korda would have hoisted the trophy. She would have been the one jumping in the pond yesterday. Would have been her first win on U.S. soil. She's won 3 times on the LPGA Tour, but they've all been in different countries. She's never won on U.S. soil. I mean, it would... And you go out there, they're playing in record heats. The caddies were using carts because the temperatures were...
You don't see
were,
that often.
No, but I mean, the temperatures are just record-setting out there in California. They're well into the triple digits. So you go out there and grind for 4 days, and then you've got to watch both the other girls that are in the playoff with you bang it off the wall on 18 and get and one of them chips in and the other one gets up and down for... I really hated the way it turned out for Nelly Korda, because I felt like the ending to that golf tournament was artificial. I did not think that it was... I did not think that it rewarded the best golf, because on that hole, you could just blast it over the green, hit the wall, use it as a backboard, and then get up and in. Interestingly enough, in the playoff, Korda had to lay up again because she put it in the left rough and it settled way down. But Henderson and Miram Lee both went for it. Miram Lee hit it to the back fringe, did not hit the wall, did not have to take a drop. Brooke Henderson hit it to the front fringe, did not hit the wall, did not have to take a drop. So it actually didn't come into play in the playoff, but in regulation, it benefited both Miram Lee and Brooke Henderson.
There wouldn't have been a playoff had there not
there would not have been a playoff.
And for me, I look at that, and the main thing I take away from that, Colby, is that even if the wall is there, it's all about where it sets you up for that third shot, that chip shot. And for a lot of the higher handicappers, that downhill runaway is tough because it's hard to get the ball to land high and soft. And so they'll hit their little pitching wedge or whatever, and it lands and runs off the green. So for a lot of people, that's a really hard shot. But for these ladies and for people
for the best players in the world,
yeah,
which these ladies absolutely are.
And you can plop it up and land the ball as soft as you want. You literally can land it within a 12-foot circle, and it's going to roll up to probably even further radius than that, just because everything funnels down there. Now, let's say, for example, you set it up to where they had to take a drop, and their drop is, let's say, they're like on the, just for an example, the backside of a Sunday pin at Augusta on 16. You know, where you're like right over the green and you have to run away.
Well, it's a very difficult shot.
There's no way that you can get the ball to within 5 feet. And if you hit it too far, you go into the bunker. If you hit it too short, you're on top of the hill.
Or even if they had a different Sunday pin, but move the pin 20 feet further back of the green where it's harder to get that ball to stop coming down the hill. Then it would be a tougher chip
shot.
It
seems like to me, Colby, now that we're kind of putting all the pieces together, that had to have been exactly what they were thinking. Put that Sunday pin. I mean, obviously the stands were there all tournament. They didn't go up there on Sunday and put the
wall
up.
Was there all 4 days. It even worse to me, because now you're creating artificial birdies for 4 days.
Couldn't agree more. And I think that had to have been a thought process throughout the whole week, because they put that pin in a, it's not necessarily a bowl, but it's a running area to where balls funnel to. And so to me, it all adds up to be a scenario of they wanted eagles and birdies at the end and drama. And technically they had drama. You had you had a 3-way playoff, a chip in for eagle.
They did. We probably wouldn't be talking about the ANA today if not for the way it played out, because it just kind of really got me fired up yesterday.
Maybe they were just great prognosticators and knew the wall would piss people off and they wanted something to talk about.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure that's what it was.
That could have been it.
You never know.
Well, it was ANA, and so, like I said, I don't even know what the hell ANA is, but I'm going to look it up.
I have no idea.
I have no idea. It's probably insurance or something. I don't know. But nevertheless, yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, there was a couple other tournaments this week that didn't really follow too much along. On the European Tour, your boy Golden Locks Fleetwood on the fairways finished third, did not win on the European Tour, so kind of right where he is, lost by 3 to George Coetzee.
Yeah, and shout out to George Coetzee,
however you pronounce it, whatever. He used to be a hell of a player. He's kind of lost a little bit of his game. But
good for him, though. Hey, that's Stuart Sink and George Coetzee this week.
Yes, it is.
Dubs.
And so I thought to throw that out there, because I know you always talk smack on Fleetwood, and he finished.
Oh, I do
finished
not.
Finished he just doesn't win. You do, too.
He just doesn't win.
Him and Finau, you run up them all the time. time.
They don't win. I root for both of them. They don't win.
And I just gave an example. Fleetwood was up there and didn't win. Finished third.
You're proving my point.
I wanted you to make... And then, before we get out of here, also a friend of the show, Taylor Moore, finished 21st last week on the Corn Ferry Tour. Oh, yeah. And so, a good way to kind of start this. I know they've had kind of a weird season since with the Corona because they had their tour championship in last week, but yet people are still keeping their cards and the rankings are still kind of going. It's a weird system. Have to probably break out the 100-page rules that they set out or whatever. But nevertheless, a top 25 finish for a friend of the show. Definitely have to bring that up. And for everyone out there listening, make sure to tune in to it'll probably be Wednesday morning when we get it out. The U.S. Open this week.
Major championship, baby!
I mean, we just got done with the Tour Championship 2 weeks ago, and now we got the U.S.
How
Open.
How great it's, is it? A September U.S. Open leading us into a November Masters. It is the golden era of golf.
It's just so weird. It doesn't feel... I mean, it was the same way with football, where it was like, oh, man, we got a football game this weekend. I didn't even realize it. You know, it's like it all just kind of hits you at once. And then that's kind of how it is with this U.S. Open. We've just got done with golf, and all of a sudden, oh, man, we got a major championship.
This weekend, we're going to have... So Oklahoma State's playing this weekend. I think OU's off. So Oklahoma State's going to be playing this weekend. We're going to have... Heat Celtics, we're going to have Lakers and either Clippers or Nuggets. We're going to have the U.S. Open going on. We're going to have another full slate of NFL games on Sunday. It is going to be it's going to be overwhelming.
It's just
and we're playing golf ourselves. You got tournaments Thursday, Friday, Saturday. I've got tournaments Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
So we're going to be playing. We're going to be missing all the sports. And no, it really is great. And it's just so weird because U.S. Open, we have a chance for Tiger to get to number 16. And it just doesn't.
Do we though?
No, he won't. He won't. I don't think there's any way.
I don't think we do.
What'd you say? What's 45-1 or something?
45-1. That's not very good value.
That's the highest odds you'll see for Tiger to win a tournament, really, since I think he had about those same odds back when he wasn't even playing, when he had his leg injury, you know? So I think that kind of goes to show where everyone's at. But just goes to show we got so much great golf coming up, so much great sports coming up. And, man, I couldn't be more excited for really this next week coming up and the U.S. Open in particular. I think before we get out, we'll talk about it more in our previous show. But just off the top of your head, Colby, what do you think the winning score of the U.S. Open will be?
Oh, that's a really good question. First off, I reserve the right to change this on Wednesday once you I know more both. About course setup. Man, the rough as long as they're saying it is, I think the winning score is going to be 3 under.
I bet it's over par.
You think it's going to be over par?
I think it's going to be over par.
I think, honestly, I think guys are too good.
Unless there's rain or if there's wet conditions or we hear something different, I don't think there's any way that it's... I mean, let me rephrase.
Let's hope it's a true over par and not a USGA manipulated over par.
Well, yeah, if they burn up the greens like they did at Shinnecock and you got balls running off the greens, so be it.
And players running off the green chasing their balls down, exactly. Putting them while they're still moving. Shout out, Phil.
And you know, I look back on it, and Ogilvy won at 5 or 6 over, and players have gotten better then, but I think we're going to see a very similar setup to what we saw then, and players are a lot better now, technology's better. I'm maybe 1 or 2 under at best, unless one of these players goes out and wins by, you know, shoots 6 or 7 under, DJ. Does a DJ and wins by a lot of shots, but... I would say this. I would think the winning score is going to be really close to par, if not over par. I would bet there's less than 5 guys that end up under par this week.
Okay, that I agree with. Yeah. That I agree with. Because I think there's a certain individual in this field who is just playing unbelievable golf that if he keeps it going, could shoot a couple under for the week and win the tournament by 5 or 6 shots.
And we'll get to that on our previous show, probably Wednesday morning.
Absolutely. Visit the73rdhole.com. Check it out. The73rdhole.com. Hit us up. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, search 73rd Hole. You can find us anywhere you want. Check us out, 73rd Hole. We are back on Wednesday to preview the U.S. Open. Thanks for listening once again to the 73rd Hole.